weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Big thanks to Two Johnnies and Afric. It's Friday the 17th of May and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, we've a non-stop weekend of sport to preview with Paul Corrie, Fergal Brennan, Ursula Jacob, Brendan Devaney and Jane Mangan. And we'll be live to Greg Allen in Valhalla for the delayed day 2 of the PGA Championship. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. Paul Corrie is with me in studio. Busy week on football front, Paul. Lots happening.
Lots happening and lots to happen this weekend. Not only in football, but even with the golf and the boxing. The sun is out.
The sun is
out.
No
complaints.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be going through everything that might happen over the weekend in just a while with all of those people that I mentioned in the opener. But now we're going to go straight to the PGA Championship, to Greg Allen at Valhalla, where it's been a day filled with drama. Greg, you might just break down for us what exactly unfolded at Valhalla Golf Club today.
Yeah, the world number one, Scottie Scheffler, has been involved in an extraordinary incident. He was arrested early this morning and charged with second-degree assault of a police officer, and that was among three other charges, another of which was reckless driving. So this all arose from a traffic incident about dawn, just as light was coming onto the course. And before I go into that, the circumstances which preceded what happened to Scottie Scheffler were related to the far more serious tragic death of a pedestrian who was hit by a shuttle bus right at the entrance to Valhalla, which is the venue for this championship. So as a result of that tragic accident, there was a very, very strong police presence, a bit of chaos as well around the entrance when Scheffler arrived to proceed to the course in a clearly marked courtesy car. And those courtesy cars, in usual circumstances, are allocated a special lane or a special status for entry to the course. But in the apparent chaos, all entry to the course was halted. And Scheffler, probably not grasping the whole picture of the situation, he was possibly unaware of the fatal accident. He attempted to proceed through the gate. An officer also attempted to stop Scheffler proceeding. And then the officer attached himself to the car, which kept moving for around another 10 yards. And that was followed by the police officer telling Scheffler to get out of the vehicle, after which he was pushed up against the car, handcuffed, placed in the back of a police cruiser. And this was all caught on video by ESPN, who were trying to get into Valhalla themselves. So they had a crew literally on site of this incident. And one of the ESPN reporters, Jeff Darlington, he actually was mistaken by police as being a colleague of Scheffler. And Darlington later went on ESPN and he said he had been told by the officer, there's nothing you can do, he's going to jail, period, being Scheffler is going to jail. So Darlington said it was clear that the police officer had no idea who Scheffler was, because another officer came up to him to ask him, could he identify Scheffler? So things moved fairly swiftly, and by 7:30 a.m. this morning, which is just, 12:30 afternoon here, or back in Ireland, Scheffler was booked by the Louisville Department of Corrections. His mugshot appeared wearing an orange jumpsuit on the website. Four charges were published on their website, one of them being second degree assault of a police officer, which is a serious charge. He was referred to as inmate 00654436, and then we heard about an hour later that he had been released and was making his way back to the course. So what we've since learned since then is that Scheffler engaged a local lawyer. He was released without having to post a bond, released on his own personal recognizance, as they say here. And that was a report also that charges might be disposed. That was not happening. These charges will stand and he will face a hearing next Tuesday. So it's a very serious incident. Incidentally, the police report indicates that Officer Brian Gillis, who was the officer at the centre of all this, was wearing a high-visibility yellow reflective jacket. Officer Gillis, he stopped Scheffler, attempted to give him instructions, and the officer said that Scheffler refused to comply, accelerated forward, dragging Officer Gillis to the ground. The officer, in the police report, is stated to have suffered pain and swelling and abrasions to his wrist and knee, for which he was treated in hospital. So it's quite serious for Scottie Scheffler, but in terms of on the golf course, does it look as though it's affected him? Not really. He's had a front nine of 34 strokes, 2 under par, and he's actually improved his situation, having birdied 2 of his first 3 holes, having arrived at the course less than an hour before his tee time, having been released. So it's a bizarre story, and Scottie Scheffler literally in hot water, I guess. It's been a very rainy day here, incidentally, so there's no hot water in terms of that. But this is very, very serious for Scottie Scheffler, but he seems to be brushing it off for the time being.
That's absolutely
crazy, Greg, when you break it all down like that. And just in terms then of everybody around, what's the knock-on effect? What's the, how have people reacted? Is it affecting what's happening on the course?
Well, I mean, it's certainly not affecting Scotty Scheffler in any tangible manner. It's just there, you know, there's extraordinary shock, and there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not it was extremely heavy-handed policing, or whether in the chaos of the accident these things have to be respected. And you know, obviously the hearing that Scotty Scheffler is going to face next Tuesday, it will be interesting to see to what degree I think the reflection of how a world number one golfer is treated. Is he treated the same as any citizen, which obviously should be the case, or will there be an exceptional circumstance laid out that because a courtesy car of the nature that Scheffler was driving, which is clearly marked, there are always exemptions given to courtesy cars to enter the gates of a golf club or a golf course which is staging a championship, and in those circumstances there may be legitimately a good sense that Scheffler made a major misjudgment and did nothing with any malice, and that whatever happened and transpired after that was really just an accidental scenario. So I think that's probably what's going to transpire in terms of any defense of Scheffler, and he himself has said it was a misunderstanding. These things happen, I suppose, in chaotic situations. That I think the most important element of all of this is that there was a tragic accident at the gates of Valhalla, which involved the death of a pedestrian who was hit by a shuttle bus, and that can't be obviously in any sense forgotten as being the most important thing that's happened today.
Yep, well, very well said, Greg. Thanks so much for joining us and for breaking all of that.
Well, I might just give you the background of what's happened on the golf course
well,
just I before
just
I go.
Go for that as well.
because it's been rather good for Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry started with two bogeys yesterday. And obviously, you know, bogey start here is like giving two shots to the field in the major championship. And Shane Lowry has now moved into the top 15. He's a nice round going. He's 2 under for the day. He birdied 2 of his first 4 holes, also birdied his 7th hole, and is now birdied his 13th hole about 15 minutes ago, par the 14th. Shane Lowry is on 4 under par, and at that point he is 5 off the lead. Xander Schauffele tees off later on 9 under par, 1 shot clear of Mark Hubbard, who's moved up to within 1 stroke of the lead on 8 under par, and Rory McIlroy, who tees off around 8 o'clock, he's on 5 under par, and Lowry on 4 under, 1 stroke behind Lowry, or McIlroy, I should say, so a nice, good Irish strong presence near the top of the leaderboard.
Okay, Greg, thank you so much, and we'll check in with you later in the hour. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us, though. We have loads to come. We've hurling, camogie, Gaelic football, soccer, boxing, racing, and more golf.
2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We're going to turn our attention to hurling. Ursula Jacob joins us now on the line. How are you, Ursula?
Hi, Marie. How are you?
Well, we often have Shane McGrath here on a Friday, so we usually start with the Munster hurling because you know the way he is. He favours Munster hurling, him being a Tipperary man. But you know what? We're going to start with the Leinster hurling today because thanks to some very surprising results over the last few weeks, it's very much almost as interesting, I would say, as the Munster Hurling Championship. What do you reckon, Ursula? It's getting there.
Yeah, I totally agree. To be honest, I don't think after 3 rounds anyone was probably expecting that Dublin will be on top, unbeaten, and going into in with a really strong position now into the last 2 games. Now, obviously, they've still to play Kilkenny tomorrow and then Galway in the final round. But, you know, Dublin have showed positive signs in the last 2 games. And then, obviously, we've had a couple of surprise and maybe results. You know, Kilkenny drawing last week against Carlow and Wexford getting beaten by Antrim. So, to be honest, I think it's been a really exciting Leinster Championship. You know, sometimes all the plaudits are towards the Munster side. So I'm happy to report and happy to say that the Leinster Championship is keeping us on our toes this year.
Yeah, it really is. And it's definitely raising eyebrows just in terms of the way things have went in some pretty big games. And Carlow Kilkenny in the draw last week was one. But I guess that means, Ursula, is that you're going to have a Kilkenny side who will be very determined to bounce back in Parnell Park when they take on Dublin this weekend.
And that's what I expect probably tomorrow evening. I think we're going to see a reaction from Kilkenny. You could see that they were pretty disgusted and disappointed with withdrawing against Carlow. Now, in saying that, you'd have to give loads of credit to Carlow. Their performance was, you know, really top drawer, and they finished the game strong. Kilkenny, you know, as Derek Ling said, you know, they probably were lacking that killer instinct towards the end, that ruthlessness that we probably associate with Kilkenny. And a few things they'll probably be looking to work on this week. You know, they had 17 wides. Their discipline was probably a little bit off. So those are the little changes I expect to see from Kilkenny. And obviously the few personnel changes. Paddy Deegan's back, Mikey Carey, and Owen Cody's a massive plus back in the attack for Kilkenny. And I think they've really been missing him. Obviously they're still without Adrian Mullen, but I expect a reaction from Kilkenny tomorrow night. And Dublin have found it extremely hard, you know, to get one over on Kilkenny. So this is going to be their biggest challenge so far in the Leinster Championship. You know, I was looking at the kind of results over the last number of years between Dublin and Kilkenny, and Kilkenny have come out on top, you know, 9 out of the last 10 meetings. And the last time Dublin beat Kilkenny was actually back in 2013, when Dublin went on to win the Leinster final. So, you know, if Dublin could get that win, it'll be massive, but a lot of things will have to go well for Dublin, I feel, to get one over Kilkenny tomorrow night.
Look, I know it's only one game, but when you look at the Carlow performance, or the lack of the Kilkenny performance as well, you'd have to imagine too, Ursula, that Dublin are going to have absolutely no fear going into this game.
Without a doubt, they're going to take huge positives. They're going to, you know, they're going to have looked closely at that Carlow Kilkenny game, and they're going to see even how the Carlow goal, they worked it through the lines, they ran at the Kilkenny defence, and they found that space, and that's something that Dublin are going to work on. Remember, they're going in with huge momentum as well. You know, no one was probably expecting that they were going to beat Antrim by 20 points last week. So they're on a high. They're you know, they're playing, you know, probably with a greater confidence. You know, each game they've probably improved, and if they get that win against Kilkenny tomorrow night, you know, they're in a Leinster final. So what a great position that would be with a game to spare, really. So, you know, so far they've collected 5 out of 6 points, and you know, if they could get one another 1 or 2 points tomorrow evening, beating Kilkenny, I'm sure they'll be happy enough. But you know, they are going to have to, you know, utilise the home advantage, you know, use Parnell Park, you know, as a fortress for Kilkenny to come there tomorrow night and make life difficult for Kilkenny.
Yeah, it's a perfect place to turn it. Well, it is a bit of a fortress for them anyway, but just the capacity and the familiarity and everything that they have there, I think it's going to be an absolute cracker. Let's move on to Carlow and Wexford, and just for the very reasons that we outlined there about Dublin not having maybe as much fear of Kilkenny because of that Carlow game, Carlow are going to be full of confidence taking on Wexford in Netwatch Cullen Park.
Without a doubt, and you know, as it was a really impressive draw. It felt like a win for Carlow and a loss for Kilkenny, but it was only a draw. But you know, they're on their home ground again. There's going to be huge Carlow support, and I think they will have targeted, you know, the Wexford game as a potential game that they think they might, you know, maybe get a draw or get a win. So Wexford know themselves they're coming into a huge battle. You know, Wexford, you know, the thing with, unfortunately for us this year, a bit in the championship, it's been up and down, so consistency is going to be the big one, and it's backing up that really brilliant display against Galway 2 weeks ago. So, you know, they're the question marks for Wexford. Can they deliver again? You know, but Carlow are going to make life very, very difficult. Like, they have some big names, big leaders on that team. Some of the guys last week that I was so impressed by, you know, Kevin McDonnell in defence, Chris Nolan, every time he got the ball he ran at Kilkenny. I expect them to do the same. Marty Kavanagh, or Fitzpatrick. And I suppose the big thing for Carlow the last day as well, you know, when their subs came on, they made an impact. You know, they got 1-3 from their subs last week, and that's something they'll probably need again, you know, coming into the closing stages of this game against Wexford. But I expect it's going to be a titanic battle, and Wexford are going to have to be at their very best to get one over Carlow.
What about Antrim and Galway then, Ursula? Do you think this is going to go as expected, or will we see something very different or very special from Antrim that they're going to need?
It's to be honest, it's probably a hard game to call in lots of ways, because both sides have been very up and down. You know, Antrim, you know, they've gone from a 32-point loss to Kilkenny to a 2-point win over Wexford, and then a 20-point loss to Dublin. So they've had extreme highs and extreme lows in the space of 3-4 weeks, and it is going to be very hard to bounce back again from last weekend, now losing, you know, 20 points to Dublin. But they're on their home ground. You know, Galway, there's question marks over Galway. One thing that was so notable for me with Galway against Wexford 2 weeks ago was their lack of energy. They were very flat. They played that game for 20 minutes with an extra man, and it didn't look like it. Their body language was poor, so there's going to be a huge improvement needed from Galway. Like, when these sides met, you know, in the league a number of weeks ago up in Antrim, Galway were ruthless. They won that game by 25 points. One worry for Antrim, they're conceding a lot of goals, and, you know, I think they've conceded 10 goals in the previous three rounds of the championship. So that could be an area that Galway will target and threaten. And they have the guys that can do the damage inside, but they need to get into the danger zone, and that's the thing that I'm sure that Shefflin and his management team will have worked on over the last couple of weeks, because they didn't threaten the Wexford goal at all 2 weeks ago. And to win games, I do think you need to be scoring one or two goals at least.
So let's move on to Munster then, Ursula. So Semple Stadium, Sunday, 4 o'clock, two of hurling's heavyweights, Tip and Cork primed for battle. What do you think is going to happen in this game?
Well, if it's anything like last year's game down in Park of Cueve, which was an epic encounter, we had 6 goals, we had, 44 points between the two of them, and they couldn't be separated. And, you know, I expect something a little bit similar, because, you know, it's a must-win game for both teams. You know, Cork are coming from the high of last week, beating Limerick, but it's not much time to recover, to get yourself back down, to then bring yourself back up, whereas Tipple have had the week's break where they'll have looked at the game last week between Limerick and Cork, and you know, Liam Cahill, I've no doubt, will have his team ready and gunning for battle, and they'll have to bring that same level of kind of grittiness that they brought to especially the final quarter against Waterford. They probably need to get that kind of consistency in their play over the 70 minutes, and again, I expect that, you know, the subs will play a part in this game on both sides, because we saw with Tip, you know, when the guys came in, Sean Keneally got a goal against Waterford. Bonner Maher made a massive difference. John McGrath. And then, you know, obviously Cork have a huge bench. And it's, you know, it's brilliant to see Kieran Joyce named in the 26, because he was a huge loss for him the last day. But yeah, Cork playing with full confidence is a danger for any team, because when they've that little bit of momentum, that little bit of buzz about them, you know, they're so dangerous. One thing they have above a lot of teams is pace. That's where I think they might catch Tip on Sunday. I think if they run a Tip's defence, I think Tip could be in trouble. You know, their aerial ability, you know, Brian Hayes, Alan Connolly, these guys only have one thing on their mind, and that's goals. So Tip are going to be aware of this. They're going to have to counteract that, and I think it's just going to be an absolutely enthralling contest, and I can't wait.
So just looking at Cork last weekend after the Limerick victory, and the outpouring of emotion and the fans and the defiance almost from the players, how are they going to manage that emotion this weekend?
Well, that's the thing, you know, it's very, very, you're on such a high, you're on such a buzz, your adrenaline is at such a high level. And then you have to bring yourself back down, and then you spend the first couple of days of this week recovering, because it was a bruising battle against Limerick. It was a warm evening, you know, it was high intensity for 70 plus minutes that evening. So it doesn't allow yourself much time to come back down, because you do need to come back down in order to bring yourself back up again. And, you know, if it's a warm day on Sunday, and, you know, a sold out packed Turles, you know, and you're coming into the Lions then against Tipperary, you know, Pat Ryan and his management team, I'm sure they've managed this week very well, and they've, you know, it's as much about recovery and kind of your mental toughness more so than actually physically doing a whole lot on the training pitch, because it's just about keeping, you know, sharp and getting the mind focused. But yeah, you just kind of have to park a game as soon as it's over, and then get ready for battle the next week. But as I said, it's about about managing your time as best as possible in the space of 6 or 7 days.
What about matchups then, Ursula? What do you think are going to be the big ones?
Yeah, like you could take matchups all over the field. You know, I just, you know, even Alan Connolly in on Ronan Marr, Brian Hayes, who's going to pick up him? He caused havoc last week against Limerick. Mark Keogh, the last day, you know, got 4 points against Waterford. He was immense and he was so, so threatening. Dara Fitzgibbon is a big one for me midfield, you know, because you've Alan Tyne in there midfield for Tip. He's an excellent worker. You know, will he be able to keep up with the likes of Dara Fitzgibbon, who's probably playing some of his best hurling in his career? And it's brilliant to see because he got 5 super points the last day for Cork. So I think he's going to be key again because he provides the energy. If he's going well, I think other guys feed off him. So whoever picks him up on Sunday is going to be a big one for me. But like, you could pick matchups all over the pitch. Even the two goalies and the role they have to play, because Patrick Collins and his puck outs for the most part were excellent the last day, you know. And that's a big feature and a big play in any game now, how you set up under the puck outs, how you know counteract the other team's puck outs. So there's so many battles, we could probably go through each line and that's the brilliant thing about it. But I definitely think we're going to see guys coming in from the bench going to make a difference as well on Sunday.
Yeah, well look, if that is the main course, can we call it Clare and Waterford the appetizer? I don't know, I think they're not far off, just in terms of the narratives and the storylines and just the quality that we're going to get. It feels like a very dangerous fixture for Clare, this one in Cusick Park.
It does, and you know, I think we're going to see as much drama on the pitch as, you know, on the sideline as on the pitch, you know, with the two managers and, you know, their relationship as well. But look, I think you're right. Waterford, you know, they would have been very disappointed with how they fared against Clare last year. You know, they basically exited the championship after losing to Clare, and you know, there was 12 points between the teams last year in the championship. I can't see that happening on Sunday. You know, Clare will want to win at home. You know, the last time they played at home, they were flying against the All-Ireland champion, and crumbled. So that's something definitely that's going to be on their mind, that they'll want to finish out a game. And obviously they've had a couple of weeks of a break, and you know, they had a huge win against Cork down in Parkyclevin. They showed huge character that day, but they're going to have to bring that same level of character to beat Waterford on Sunday, because Waterford, I think they probably would have been slightly disappointed to get the draw against Tipperary. I think they probably would have felt that was a game they should have won, they should have closed out. So Davey, when he's hurting and when his team is hurting, you know, they'll want to respond back and try to get the win, because they know themselves that they've got Limerick away in the final game. So it puts that bit more pressure on them, and if they could get a win on Sunday, you know, they must do enough to win the top three. But again, you know, I think it's going to be an intriguing encounter. Like, Tony's named in the 26 on Sunday. Will we see him play a part? You know, who knows? I think the two half-back lines for me are going to be key to whoever wins on Sunday, because, you know, Dermot Ryan, John Conlon and McInerney for Clare, like, they've laid the platform so many times and launched so many attacks for Clare, even to the couple of goals that they got against Cork a couple of weeks ago. But then equally, I look at the Waterford half-back line, and Waterford probably will go with that extra man back, and you'll have Ty playing his usual sweep and roll, and then you've the two guys on either side, Caelum Lyons and Jack Fagan, who, you know, are very strong in the air, and they're not afraid to push forward. And that's something I like to see with those guys, because they're so athletic, they're so capable of scoring from distance, but they'll have their hands full against, you know, the Clare half forward line. So yeah, I think whoever can potentially get on top of the half back line, I think will have a good chance of winning on Sunday. But it's so hard to call. Like, we could see draw games, we could see 1 point victories. I don't think there's going to be very much that separates either team.
Yeah, look, there's must win games everywhere. Marissa, just on the Camogie as well, so we do have two provincials finals this week. The Leinster final, 4 o'clock tomorrow, Dublin and Kilkenny, and then on Sunday, Cork and Waterford in Semple Stadium. The All-Ireland series is just around the corner. We'll be previewing that next week. But just on these two games, Ursula, how do you think they're going to go?
Yeah, well, firstly, I'm thrilled that the Waterford Cork game is going to be played before the Tip Cork hurling match in Thurles, and I'd encourage as many people to get in to watch the Camogie, because, you know, two top-class teams, a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final. Waterford are probably going to be looking for a small bit of revenge against Cork, and even the fact that Gerry Wallace is over at Waterford this year with the Camogie, and he's a Cork man. You know, there's a little bit of a bite to the fixture, and Waterford, you know, had a huge win over Tipperary in the semi final, so they're going to be going in full of confidence, and obviously Beck Carton is still shooting the lights out, and Cork, you know, probably had a disappointing enough league that they didn't reach the league final, and they have a new manager, Germanley. So, you know, I think the two teams have a point to prove. I think it'd be a massive statement for Waterford if they could get a win over Cork on Sunday. The big thing for me is, you know, they conceded 5 goals in the All-Ireland final last year, and it wasn't a true reflection probably of Waterford, but they're going to have to be so wary of the threat inside again with the Cork full forward line. But the thing about Waterford this year, I think Gerry has tightened up the defence. Clodagh Carroll has been immense, and they've had a lot of clean sheets. I think out of 7 games they've had 5 clean sheets, so that's a really important statistic from a Waterford point of view. But I think if Cork could punish him for goals, they'll be in trouble. But I think it's going to be a really intriguing game. And then in the Leinster final, obviously Dublin Kilkenny, you know, it's strange with Kilkenny, we haven't seen a whole lot from them. Again, they probably had a disappointing league, and they're kind of tipping away, and they're getting some of their main girls back, you know, Miriam Walsh, Grace Walsh, these girls, and they need those leaders within the team. Dublin obviously are coming off a high of winning their league title, so they're going to be going for a second title within a couple of weeks, and I think it'll be a close game. I give Dublin every chance, and I think it'll be a really tough battle between the teams, because Dublin won't fear playing Kilkenny. They're a very physical team, they're very fit. I've seen them a couple of times this year, and they're well structured and well set up, and they won't allow Kilkenny too much space up front. So I think it's going to be another close one, but for me, probably Kilkenny might edge it.
Okay, Ursula, thank you for all of that. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon. We're going to take a very quick break. Brendan Devaney is standing by to look ahead to the weekend's Gaelic football.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Brendan Devaney is with us on the line. Brendan, talking about Gaelic football after hurling, it can be hard sometimes, me being a hurling snob and all the rest. We're going to have a tough weekend now, the Gaelic football trying to live up to the hurling drama.
Yeah, listen, you can understand sometimes, I suppose, that listen, I love both games, and I think there's probably people, I think all the football people like watching hurling, particularly live hurling. I must admit, I wouldn't be one for highlights now, I need to see it live. but I think the other way around, most of them would be like, here, put on the snooker.
Oh gosh, well look, I don't know about that, but even Jim McGuinness said he was watching Cork and Limerick last weekend. So anyway, we do have Gaelic football, and we probably will get another great game, because in fairness, the Ulster final last weekend was up there with Game of the Weekend, so we'll give Gaelic football that. This weekend though, so we have the round one of the Senior Football Championship All-Ireland Series. So Clare, Cork, Galway, Derry, Mayo, Cavan, Kerry, Monaghan. For me anyway, the pick of the games is Galway and Derry. Just imagine it being a really lively affair, Brendan. What you reckon?
Yeah, it seems like me. Listen, sometimes we're probably a bit hard on ourselves in games, and I think no matter what, the games are fascinating. And if you look at the backstory, there's obviously, Derry now have time to regroup, you know, 5 weeks and reassess what they did wrong. And you know, I don't want to say we're, you know, against Donegal. It was completely outthought, and some of the players are going out saying, you know, that we're really, you know, outplayed and outthought, and you know, the tactics were wrong. And you know, I think why was Mickey Hart brought in to take them to the next stage, take them to All Ireland? So in many ways, they've got a bit of a lesson from Jim McGuinness. But listen, are they hurting from that? How much will they get energy from that? Surely there's a lot of people wanting to put things right in the camp, and it's fascinating to see their tactics now come there. Do they stick to those high press type tactics that we've seen in the league final example against Dublin, or do they revert now more into that defensive Ulster kind of football that we're used to? You know, the words coming out, obviously McGrogan is out the season. I hear McAvoy has actually got a bad injury as well. Glass has a slight injury. I think he's going to make it, but McAvoy would be a big miss if he doesn't make it.
When I look through the games, to be fair, every team will think that they have a chance of winning them, because they are all pretty fascinating. Even Clare and Cork, it's another game. Cusick Park, it's going to be a busy weekend in Cusick Park. You just never know who's going to come out on top.
Yeah, well, obviously Clare beat them last year, but you have this question mark around Clare. Listen, 10 players lead the squad, yeah. Marie, and 10 of the best players. So we were surprised how well they did in the league, and then they make the Munster final. And we spoke before about how Cusack Park just electrified their challenge. That had it been in Kerry or neutral, you know, it would have been a non-event. So listen, they're back there. They have a good record against Cork as well. So we need to see what Cork came again. We're not sure about Cork again. So question marks. I suppose that Leeds then, Craig, you know, they had 1-6 in opening 20 minutes against Kerry. They only scored 6 points in the 55 minutes after that. So we're just not sure what type of Cork team is going to turn up versus Clare. And I just hope really that there's a bit of crowd and a bit of buzz there, because I'm looking at some of the games. We wanted to be Championship, and we're kind of, I suppose, teeing them up as Championship games, but that'll only happen maybe if the crowd's in it, maybe if the crowd's in and they're invested in it. And I've no doubt, like Galway and Derry, that will be the case. So we just hope there's a good crowd coming. I'm sure after their performance against Kerry, they've gained a lot of respect, and Clare and hopefully Cork will follow.
Kerry and Monaghan in Killarney, is that probably the toughest one of the weekend, Monaghan going to Killarney?
Yeah, I would say so. Again, 6 weeks, you know, after a defeat to Cavan. We haven't seen the most. I just don't understand. Jack O'Connor saying the real Championship starts here, and maybe Kerry have been waiting for that. I just thought they'd be slicker going through Ulster, particularly since the damage that Dublin defeat did them. I thought that would give them a bit of a lift, that they were going to come at it a bit faster. You know, Clare cut through them quite a few times down through the middle. They don't play it too defensively. You know, they don't pack their defence. I mean, they don't do it that well. They play their own set of football, which often makes games much more interesting. They haven't scored any goals yet in the Championship. How they didn't score a goal against Clare, I don't know. But this Monaghan team, I think, will certainly ask a lot of questions, because they'll run the ball. You know, you look at McCarthy, Bannigan, O'Hanlon. Now, O'Hanlon didn't play against Cavan. If he's back, you know, the running power that they have in there, you know, young Hamill as well. So I think this Monaghan team might ask a lot of questions. I just think defensively, Bagan's obviously gone. You know, Hughes, the injury out for the season and that. You just wonder defensively. I think Avell will probably pick up Clifford. If they can stop the Kerry attack in some way, I think they'll ask a lot of questions go forward.
What about Mayo and Cavan? Can you see that being a tight encounter?
Yeah, again, mate, what is going on? I don't know with Mayo. You know, are they playing? You know, they've lost this kind of running game. They want to be more controlled, but does that suit them? You know, I was just thinking that last play, Marie, said a lot for me. You know, whatever about the freeze leading up to it, they had possession against Galway, and you've got to ask questions of their management and the players in terms of, you know, it's critical, critical moments. They won the kick, but they have one last opportunity, and somehow that hand pass inside the Loftus, they swamp. Player hand passed him the ball, had to be thinking, where is he? Loftus, as soon as he gets it, has to be thinking, what's my options? And there has to be players coming off him and shouting and directing him. None of them things happen. And Galway get the chance to win Connacht, and it knocked Mayo back a bit. So, you know, question marks still. And I think for years, and I see a wee bit of pessimism even coming out from Mayo. I think every year, really, they could have beaten anybody in Ireland, and they could have went anywhere, as in got to the final. I don't think that's the case anymore. And I just feel for Mayo, after all the glory years, that I don't think they're up to beating a top team in Croke Park. Not the way I'm looking at them now. But for Cavan coming in, they might certainly, obviously, Paddy Lynch is the big disappointment for them. I think Oisin Brady will take over the freeze. There's word of McCready being back as well. He can play an inside line as well. So, you know, it remains to be seen how much of a loss Lynch is a target man as well. You know, you have Tim Madden in there, I'll have to step up the plate. And Keegan O'Reilly scored 10 points recently in a friendly against Cork. So for Gavin to have a positive result there, they're going to have those lads on top to perform against Leo.
Brendan Devaney, thank you very much for getting through all of that for us. We'll talk to you next week. Before we go, actually, I didn't get to congratulate you on Donegal's win at the weekend. I haven't spoken to you since.
Listen, it's funny, mate. You just leave all that to the player. Jim writes his own history the way I see it, mate. There's no stopping this man. Hey, so listen, it's been a busy, busy week, mate. It's been all go, but I've got the blow-up jacuzzi there, so I'll settle in there now and have a wee toast to the big one.
I love the picture of your little boy asleep at the game.
I know. Marie, we're some crack now if he ended up playing in there, and you would say there's your first
there's so much attention you played to Jim writing history for us.
Yeah, it's a big day. Consult the life out here, but he came live for the celebrations.
Good. I was curious about that. Actually, I was going to ask you. Good to hear. I'm sure he'll you'll remind him of it. Well, that picture is out there now, so there's no getting away from it. Thank you so much, Brendan. We'll talk to you again soon. We're going to take another break now, but we still have to get through the Premier League, the boxing, and racing. So do stay with us.
RTE 2FM.
Welcome back. Paul Carey has been waiting very patiently to talk about the final day of the Premier League. Fergal Brennan has joined us as well. Fergal, before we get on to that, a little bit of news. Arne Slot has said that he is taking over as Liverpool manager, but Liverpool have yet to confirm it. Is there a date, a time, a place where he's going to be announced?
There's nothing confirmed in terms of a specific date. I'd imagine it will be wrapped up before the start of Euro 2024, because so many of the players involved with Liverpool will be going away on international duty. There's also the Copa America as well, so that they'll want confirmation of this news before pre-season starts in earnest at the end of June, because there's pre-season tours and that kind of thing to be dealt with. So I'd imagine it will be pretty soon when the ink is dry on the contract, shall we say. And Arne Slot has been very honest and very open about this throughout the links that he's had, where he's effectively said all along that he wants the job, that he's happy to talk to Liverpool, he's happy for the negotiations to take place. It just seems as if the final piece of the jigsaw puzzle needs to be dropped in now, and sooner rather than later, Arne Slot will be the new Liverpool manager, which sounds very strange considering that Jurgen Klopp is still technically in place, and certainly for this weekend, but it seems done, and Arne Slot will be the new Liverpool manager.
It's not that exciting, Paul, is it? Let's cut to it.
From an appointment,
it's a bit underwhelming.
Yeah,
I know we knew about it a while back, but just even him and saying it himself today, it's like, oh right, that's it then.
Yeah, I mean, particularly the shoes that you're going to have to fill, and the character that is Jurgen Klopp. It was always going to be difficult, irrespective of who they appointed. But I think the Dutch league is not one that is probably followed too much, and I think when Liverpool fans look at what has happened at Old Trafford with Erik ten Hag coming in the door, I know he has a lot to juggle there on his plate, but people probably question his management style and what he's done at that club. And then also, if you look at some of the players that come from the Dutch league, very, very underwhelming. So there'll be a few sceptics out there. I'm sure it's
out there and in here.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be one of those people. I think he's got a massive job in his hands. And even when you see Matip and Thiago going out the door, there's a couple of players coming into the last 12 months of their contract. There's so much going on in that club, but at least there's stability from, you know, director of football, ownership, and so on.
Yeah, very important. It is the final day of the Premier League on Sunday. It's hard to believe we're at this stage, but here we are, and it's pretty much wrapped up, unless there's this twist that comes out of nowhere, but I can't really see it, Fergal. Man City against West Ham, Arsenal against Everton, Man City, West Ham. Can you see that being anything other than a Man City win?
No, it's difficult to see any change. I think it's an enormous credit to both teams and both managers in Guardiola and Arteta that when they've thrown the challenge down to each other, both of them have picked it up, accepted it, and pushed the other one a little bit, and then the other one has pushed back. And we saw in midweek, it was the first time in a while that Manchester City were obviously in a position to draw level on games with Arsenal. The Tottenham match was the game in hand that's been talked about for so many weeks, that it's the possibility that it could be an issue for Manchester City, and it's the one weirdly marked on the diary for Arsenal fans to ask for a cheeky favour from their rivals. It obviously didn't pan out that way from an Arsenal perspective, but I just think it's a measure of how consistent and how much they've pushed each other this season, that there's been so many different scenarios of when the games have been played, who's played first, who's played second, what the league position has been when the other one has had to play, and they've both just absolutely nailed it. And I think particularly in the context of the Champions League, questions were asked of both teams. Even though Man City have more experience and they were defending European champions, neither of them wobbled. Arsenal getting knocked out by Bayern Munich and then Man City getting knocked out by Real Madrid, they both just immediately picked up, got a win straight away and carried on. So I don't see a twist. I see a win each. West Ham obviously are in a position that they can't qualify for Europe. It is David Moyes' last game, so there's a bit of a narrative there. Everton are obviously safe. Sean Dyche has had quite a good record in the last few weeks. He's mission accomplished from his perspective to keep Everton in the Premier League. But I struggle to see how it would change. I think if there was a team going to either the Emirates or the Etihad with something to play for, maybe, but I find it difficult to make a case for a big swing on Sunday.
The fact that West Ham leaked 5 goals away from home against Crystal Palace, followed by another 5 goals away from home to Chelsea. It's hard to see
West Ham leaking goals, Man City scoring goals. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly. As straightforward as that, isn't it?
Isn't it gas? Like, you come to February every year and you just expect Man City's going this run.
Yeah.
And they inevitably do. Like, the fact that they've gone, I think it's 8 games on the bounce, win after win after win, and they've been here so many times that you could sometimes question a team's motivation, individuals maybe stepping off the gas a little bit. They had to juggle so many different competitions. The consistency of that team is remarkable, to do it season in, season out. And I'm with Fergal. I don't see any sort of, you know, upset. If you think back to Aston Villa that last day of the season when they went 2-0 behind, or all the way back to the QPR game, I think this is probably going to be one that they'll win with a little bit more ease and a little bit more control.
Speaking of players lacking motivation, Chelsea seem to have found a little bit of motivation. I don't know where it's come from, but they look set to get 6th. They are playing Bournemouth on Sunday. So from a Chelsea fan perspective, Paul, it's not too bad at the end.
Yeah, things have certainly picked up in the last couple of weeks. And I think Pochettino has found a bit more consistency in a selection as well. Enzo Fernandez being injured has probably just enabled him to pick the same team, particularly from the middle of the pitch, and Saicedo and Gallagher have done well. Mudryk has looked a little bit more lively on the wing, as has Madueke. Jackson threatening, still not exactly brilliant in front of goal, but they've certainly shored things up, and there seems a bit more rhythm and consistency in their play, and that has led to better results. So it's hard to believe that Chelsea are sitting in 6th when you consider how many points they've dropped throughout the season. Lost home and away against Wolves, lost at home against Brentford, Nottingham Forest, drew at Burnley, drew at Sheffield United, and they're still sitting in 6th position, only 3 points behind Tottenham, who everybody was raving about at the beginning of the season, in Postecoglou. So it'll be an important summer for Chelsea. There's obviously a lot of questions around financial fair play and whether or not they're going to have to shift one or two bodies out of the building. But Pochettino has definitely commanded more respect from the fans and more respect from board level. And you would like to think that he would be able to carry that into the next season. And it will be an important summer, though, Marie. They certainly need one or two players. But whether or not they're going to be able to do that with the constraints around financial fair play is another thing.
OK, thank you so much for joining us, Fergal, and for all of your contributions all through the season. I hope you're getting a little bit of a break, and we'll be back before we know it. That's the thing. But appreciate all your time, Fergal. Thank you so much. Paul Curry, before we finish up on the football, Stephen Kenny has his first game tonight against Derry City. He's named a team and has made a couple of changes from their last day out, which was that the side that drew 2-2 away at Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, he's brought in Jake Mulroney and Keane Levy, and that probably doesn't come as too much of a surprise, Marie. If you think back to Stephen Kenny's sides at Dundalk, and even with the 21s when he was very successful, it was all about width and pace and energy, and those two players bring that in abundance. So it'll be very interesting to see how they get on. There's so much excitement around this appointment, and it's brilliant to have him back. I know a lot of people will think about the recent job that he did with the Irish national team, maybe not going too well. But the job he did at Dundalk, and particularly with the Irish 21s, I think people forget that one. And the performances he was able to get out of certain players and developing that talent, I think he's going to be primed to do that at St. Pat's.
He's brought in Graham Byrne, he's S&C coach from Dundalk as well. So
and there'll be a number two appointment. I suspect it could be Stephen Rice, so being Greenwood, what Alan was saying last night, I think there's a good relationship there. But
I'm going to keep excited to Tracy.
excited to see, like, Mason Media.
Until we get him on, then I'll ask him.
Mason Media starts again tonight. 16, 17 years of age, was brilliant up front last week, and it'd be great to see what Stephen can do with him. So massive, massive week in the League of Ireland. A couple of games on Monday as well.
Yeah, really is. Thank you very much, Paul. We're going to turn our attention to boxing now, because even though there's a lot of other sport going on, there's a huge boxing match between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk on Saturday. And to talk us through how it might go, Gavin Casey of The 42 joins us. So, Gav, what are you expecting from this big heavyweight bout?
Marie, I'm expecting a very tense encounter. I'm not sure it's actually going to be the most entertaining bout of all time, but it is massive, as you outlined. The first undisputed heavyweight fight since 1999. Lennox Lewis beat Evander Holyfield, and that kind of puts it into context. You've got two guys in Usyk and Fury who are both unbeaten, both title holders, so all of the belts come together, winner takes all, and I have a feeling, just because of the size disparity between them, Fury being 6'8", 6'9", Usyk being kind of a more conventionally sized fighter who came up from cruiserweight, that Fury will probably use his natural size advantage early, try to tie up Usyk in close, drain him of energy, and finish down the line strongly. Whereas I think with Usyk, he has the kind of fitness that he should be able to withstand that. He has faster feet than Fury as well, and I just think if he can kind of survive a a little bit of an early physical test, he may have enough ring IQ and just intuition to have downloaded enough about Fury where he starts to land and find a mark in the final 6-7 rounds, and then it'll, in my opinion, come down to the cards. My fear for Usyk, if there was one, aside from the giant man across from him, of course, is there's already talk of a Fury-Joshua fight in Saudi Arabia, and when fights come down to the cards and there's a massive fight on the other side of it that's kind of on the line, sometimes the guy involved in that second fight gets the benefit of the doubt. But ultimately, I find it very hard to call. I think it's going to be a close fight, maybe not the most compelling viewing, but certainly one to watch in that it's era-defining.
Okay, it mightn't be the most compelling viewing, but we've been, okay, headbutts aside, quite entertained by the camps and the carry-on and the taunts and all that. So I guess the entourages are building it up for us anyway.
Yeah, you could take or leave some of that. I find it interesting the efforts of both fighters, the two guys who actually matter, to try and get in each other's heads, because I look at them both as being pretty much impenetrable when it comes to mind games, and a lot of it felt futile. And even at the press conference yesterday, Fury refusing to look at Usyk, and when he was walking away, there was footage of him kind of indicating he'd gotten in Usyk's head by not looking at him. And it's like, Alexander Usyk is a man who's fought in war for Ukraine. I don't think a guy not looking at him is going to be especially intimidating. He's also got one of the greatest CVs in modern boxing history. I just don't think either guy is scared of each other. What they may find in the ring is that they're scared to lose, because they haven't tasted that as professionals, either of them. The thing is as well, and maybe this is a bit of an anticlimactic way to finish, but there will be a rematch, probably either way, unless it's extremely conclusive. So we'll probably have a chat about it again further down the line. For now, though, it will define a heavyweight era until somebody has a chance to redefine it maybe 4 or 5 months further down the line.
Okay, Gav, thank you as always for that. We're going to go to racing now. Jane Mangan is on the line to set us up for the weekend. Jane, what can we look forward to?
There's much to look forward to Marie. Navin and Wexford tomorrow, they're flat in National Hunt car, but I suppose the feature race anywhere this weekend is coming from Newbury, because that's the Lockinge at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, featuring the French horse Big Rock, his first run from Maurizio Guarnieri. He was a champion last year over the mile. He takes on Inspiral, who of course is a 6-time Group 1 winner. Now Kieran Schumacher filling in for Frankie Dettori as first jockey for John and Sadie Gosling. Big ride for him. Taking on Sharon and Poker Face, but I actually like a horse called Royal Scotsman in here. He was placed in the Guineas last year. He was unlucky on a number of occasions against the likes of Chaldean and Paddington, and I think he's overpriced, something around 16-1 against the big horses who have a couple of questions to answer. So that's the Lockinge tomorrow at 3:30. The feature races at home will come from Naas on Sunday, because that's where the RT cameras will be for Royal Ascot Trials Day. This is the day last year where we saw two Royal Ascot winners emerge in Porta Fortuna, who won the Albany, and River Tiber. But at 10-3, the race that's thrown up the last two Albany Stakes winners goes to post the Philly Sprint Stakes. And I like Jessica Harrington's Barnava. I was impressed with what I saw from her at Sakura 2 weeks ago, first time up, and post-race it sounded like her connections weren't all that surprised at how good she was. I think in the Sprint Stakes, the second race, Betson has a really good chance for Jack Davidson and Ronan Whelan, and the opening race may well go the way of Treasure Isle, the race that River Tiber won last year en route to winning the Coventry. But there is much racing happening this weekend. Let's hope Ryan Moore doesn't get stuck in traffic or stopped by the guards, but he would be the man you'd be targeting because he's the best around.
Jane, thank you so much for that. We will be talking to you again next week. We are nearly out of time, but we do have just about enough time to head back to Greg Allen, who's in Valhalla, to see how things are going in the golf. Greg?
Yes, the USPGA Championship, second major of the year. We've got a 3-way tie for the lead now, because Xander Schauffele, who shot that major championship record equaling 62 yesterday, Schauffele, incidentally, is not on the course yet, but he's been joined on top of the leaderboard by Colin Morikawa, former USPGA champion back in 2020. He's 4-under for 14 holes. He's moved to 9-under par alongside Schauffele, as has another American, Mark Hubbard, 3-under for the 10 holes he's played, 9-under for the championship, Mark Hubbard, and who has moved into fourth place all on his own, Scotty Scheffler. with back-to-back birdies on the 12th and 13th holes. And the man who was arrested this morning faces four charges, which we spoke about earlier, after an incident with police, a traffic incident with police. He is just one shot off the lead. Extraordinarily implacable golf from Scotty Scheffler. Shane Lowry, 4-under after 16. Rory McIlroy, 5-under yet to start. Clearly, Paddy Carrington having a bad day. 9-over after 11 holes. But in general, it's been a day, a bizarre day. And the most important part of all of this is the death of a tournament vendor, worker, John Mills, which was one of the reasons why that incident, that traffic incident at the beginning of the day, was what it was. The very, very serious event, which has overshadowed this second day of the championship.
Absolutely, and well said. Thank you so much for all of that, Greg. So, Paul Corey, thank you for coming into studio as well. What are you looking forward to most this weekend?
Probably the boxing. I'll be a boxing expert now tomorrow night. Shadow boxing in the sitting room.
What time is it on at?
Good question.
Yeah, we need to find out what time.
Saudi fights are usually around late evening.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay, that is all from us this evening. There was a huge amount to get through. It is set up for another fantastic weekend of sport. I have to say, there probably is something for absolutely everybody, all of our sports fans. So do tune in, and Ruby and Shane will be back on Monday. They'll be reviewing all of the weekend's sports action. So the official chart show with Blonde and Tracy is up next.